Hey, welcome to Big Jim's Garage, weekly podcast here. Just hanging out in the garage. Very casual conversations with musicians, car people, athletes, you name it, we'll get them. Steve Lukather is going to join us here in just a second. Luke from Toto. I am blown away the more you learn about Steve Lukather. The more you learn about Luke, you start to realize what an amazing artist and guitar player he is. He's one of those studio guys, too. Wrecking Crew, inspired by the Beatles, obviously, with Toto. My God, how many songs from Toto? Millions and millions. And the whole thing with Africa. But not only that, their music, I mean, hold the line. We play that. The song just jumps out. His guitar playing. I would highly encourage you to go to YouTube. And I should put I'll put it up with this if you go to our link at WCSX for this. It's him, Jeff Beck, and Carlos Santana in Japan. And they are just getting after it. In 1986, and Steve just jumps up and goes right at him. I think they were doing Johnny B. Goode on stage, and they absolutely just nailed it. So Steve Lukather will be joining us here. They're getting him right now on the phone. Real quick note, if you go to our garage page, WCSX.com, they found the guy making the car noises during the Formula One race. And also, if you missed what Kevin Harvick did over the weekend when he grabbed a kid and put him up on there, it was fantastic. So a lot of cool stuff here going. And stand by for the Luke right now. The name of the book, by the way, is The Gospel According to Luke. It is out everywhere. Hello, Luke. Good morning.
Good morning to you, man. Good morning, wherever the hell I am.
Detroit. You've never been here before, huh?
I've been to Detroit. What are you talking about? I've been to Detroit many times. I was just there.
I know that. It's always fun to go back through the concert database and look for Toto and how many gigs you guys have had here over the years.
Well, I remember the first tour, which first time we played there, what was it, the theater there, man. I don't know. I've always had good times in Detroit, man.
Well, you always, the books, I got to tell you, here's the best thing about the book, the best compliment I can give you about the book.
You read the book. Oh, cool.
Well, they sent me like a PDF of it. I started reading it, and I go, okay, wait a minute. So I went and downloaded it. I bought it, downloaded it, and I didn't want to jump around, because normally you want to jump around so you have notes when you interview the person, right?
Right.
I sat yesterday and ripped through half the book on my Kindle.
Wow, man. I know I've been getting this a lot from people who said, I just picked it up, and then I ended up spending 2 days reading it. I'm going, I never expected it. It's gotten way better than I could have expected. It was like number one Amazon rock bio. I even made heavy metal bio. How's that? Well, that's how messed up is that?
Well, I was just talking about
an audiobook, which is up for a pre-Grammy. I may actually make the Grammy cut, which is pretty funny.
I was just talking about
sure my English teachers growing up were kidding themselves. Dude, I gotta watch my mouth. Sorry about that.
No, don't worry about it, man. We're taping this. You can cuss all you want.
7 second delay, right?
Yeah, we'll dump it. But you know the thing for me, Steve Lukather, by the way, you know him best Toto with us here, the memoir, The Gospel According to Luke. I wind up going off rabbit holes. Like all of a sudden, when you were talking about some of the jam sessions you had, I go up and I pull up this YouTube video of you and Jeff Beck and Carlos Santana in Tokyo in '86. So
Oh my God, man! They only recorded half the side of the effects channel of my amp, which kind of sounds crappy, but.
But then,
there were 400 people on stage at 9,000 dB, so it was a little hard to get through, you know, I guess.
Oh, you nailed it. But then I said, okay, cool, I'm going to get back to the book. And then all of a sudden I see analyzing songs, and there's a guy that takes Rosanna and breaks down your guitar hits on it, note by note, how you layered everything. Isn't it amazing?
I'm always amazed that anybody would take the time to do that. You know, there's so many more legendary guys to bother with than me, you know, but I'm very flattered by all that. You know, it's been a wild ride, man. I kind of look back after I wrote this book. I'm going like, did I really do all this? I mean, did it? When they put together my, selected discography at back of the book, it's like, you know, 30 pages long or something of small print. And I'm going, how did I figure out how did I time manage all that? But I did. Apparently I did.
Can I give you a pro tip here, Steve?
Yeah.
You ready? Just looking back, when you invite Elton John over to your house, you should tell the other people in the house that you invited him over.
Yeah, well, you know, I didn't think he was going to show up.
It's not an excuse.
At the time, we had been working together. You know, that's how come that all happened, you know? And we got on really well. I mean, this was like, you know, probably like 79 through 83, 85, we saw each other a few here and there, you know, when we could. You know, he was a great cat. I really loved working with him. But, you know, somebody goes, oh, I'm going to come by. Yeah, sure, Elton's going to come by the pad. Sure. You know, I never expected him to show up. So it was kind of, I just didn't think about it. You know what I mean? That's what shocked my first wife, actually.
Did Marie open the door and there's Elton John just standing there?
Yeah. And she screamed in his face. Ah! And he was like, what? Like, what the fuck? Because they hadn't met yet. I had been working with him. She didn't know him.
Did you get the crap smacked out of you for that?
No.
No?
Just more like, you should have told me. What the fuck?
As many people as you, and the cool thing about this, Luke, is you're not name dropping in this. You're just talking about how, you know what I mean? There's a difference.
Like, oh, yeah, digging yourself. But isn't an autobiography you have to write? Well, I did this. It's a lot of me, and I'm not that guy. So I tried to be a little bit humble about it. I mean, you get in a room with Paul McCartney, how are you not going to, like, jump up and down and go, that's pretty cool?
Right.
I didn't do it at the gig, but afterwards, I was like, man, it was what a day. It was so cool, you know?
And you, I love how you talk about
it. I'm still a music fan. You know what I mean? I don't think I'm that big of a deal. I just think that I've done a lot of interesting stuff, but I've gotten a chance to work with some real legendary people, and it was a great honor for me. So I'm writing with joy and humility as opposed to dig me.
A friend of mine, Jim Moose Brown, plays guitar for Seeger. And Moose.
I did a Seeger record, man. I love Bob.
Wait a minute. Which one were you on?
Fire Inside.
Wait a minute, that's you on the title track, or which one?
I'm on the album somewhere. I forget what it was.
So, okay,
he
that's...
He asked me to join the band a tour, but I couldn't do it.
How many times, because you talk about Elton offered you this gig, how many different bands can you, I mean, off the top of your head, how many different bands have tried to get you to go out with them?
A few people. We've all been trying to, I mean, they tried to, Springsteen tried to, and Dire Straits tried to steal Jeff. We've had a lot of offers to join other bands. But, there's something about our high school band that keeps sucking me back, you know?
So how old were you when you weren't you in a band called the English Muffins?
I was like about 12 years old. I've lived with a slew of really horrendous names, man.
Well, you had more, though. I mean, so you had a Grand Funk cover band, right? You guys, but that was legit.
Oh, yeah, no, I did all sorts of crazy stuff. And when I was young, I mean, it wasn't really, they didn't call it a cover band back then. We just... That was the music we were listening to. I learned a lot from playing Creedence Clearwater, Beatles, and Grand Funk. I learned all that stuff note for note. And it was in real time. So back then, by today's standards, that would seem rather easy, perhaps, maybe. But, I mean, learning the basics, playing with a band, and learning songs and learning the solos like they are on the record, that was really invaluable. It's so valuable to have spent the time to do that, and people dug it. We were really young, so that was there wasn't a lot of 12, 13 year old kids playing like that when we were kids.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Well, and you tell this. I'm walking a line here, Steve, because I don't want to give away the book. I hate when people tell the best parts of the book. There's so many stories here. I'm just telling people to read the book. There's a lot in there.
You're really making some broad strokes here. I mean, there's every page has interesting and funny stuff in it. I tried to make it amusing.
Oh, it is.
So it would be a fun read, not like oh god. And then I did. I had to cut 400 pages out of this thing.
Are you serious?
My life is not easily put into 300 pages.
Is the term pocket an insult or a compliment when someone says they're playing in the pocket?
No, pocket is a compliment. That means you're playing in the groove. It's when you're not in the pocket that you suck.
Well, but you see like some musicians, that go off on their own, that on a tangent, especially guitarists, or some are known for, doing their own thing. And maybe, but like with Toto, it's always been, you'd read the reviews. Toto's a great band. Steve Lukather really stayed in the pocket on this one. And I'm like, I don't know. What does that mean? It just means you're with the song, right?
It means that I was in the groove, I guess. I don't know. I'll take that as a compliment. I'm used to getting my ass handed to me by the press,
So hold the line. I still can't believe this because that's one of those songs that when we play it on the radio here, it still jumps off the speakers. You nailed that in one take. Man. It does. It jumps off the speakers. We always laugh about it because we're like, my God, that song is
huge.
You should
hear the remaster. It's much better.
So now that's what's coming out. That's the box set, right?
We did a remaster with Elliot Shiner of Steely Dan fame and Gavin Larson, multi-Grammy. We went back from the quarter-inch un-EQ'd masters and redid this, right? It sounds like the first three albums have been remixed. It's so clear. You're hearing parts you've never heard, and it screams off without compression and you know, high-end EQ, which is distortion and makes it bad, which is what most people do when they remaster. Just turn up the volume, crank on the compression and high-end, and hey, instant remaster. It sounds like crap, you know?
So that song to me, though, you did that in one take.
Well, I did the solo in one take, but except for the harmony part at the very end of it, I overdubbed that. But the solo was one take, yeah. The track was probably one or two takes with Jeff and Dave, and then we overdubbed on it. We used to make records a very strange way. Sometimes we play all together. Sometimes Dave would just have a brand new song. Go, I got to get this thing on tape. Jeff, play the drums. Come on, we got to get this down on tape. You know, while it's fresh. So they would cut it, and then we'd go, that's fantastic, let's overdub. And then we'd make the record. Sometimes we'd all sit out in the room and play it. You know, there was no rules.
Is there one song, I always love asking this question of artists, is there one, if somebody came to you and said, I've never heard a song from Toto in my life, what one song do you have them listen to?
I have an answer.
Okay.
I think the song Rosanna probably puts it all, puts it all together for us. I mean, you got multiple vocals, multiple solos, the groove, sort of famous solos and grooves at this point. That is a really good representation of what I would think people go. If you listen to this song, this is a good broad stroke of what our band is all about.
Do you realize in 500 years we're still going to be playing Africa on the radio?
I don't know whether to say thank you or I'm sorry.
Dude, it's a compliment.
This, bro. It was the last cut on side two, Buried. We just had fun producing this monster record, and then then Dave brought the lyrics in, and we started laughing, going, really? But, you know, it's been dissected and made fun of, and some people get it, some people don't. It's a kitschy little thing. It's a fantasy song Dave wrote about Africa. Dave was always a history buff, and he went to school and a Catholic school with a bunch of what do you call it? Not monks, but guys that go over and help people. And
Mission work, missionaries, people going over and doing that. Yeah.
And, these people would talk really fondly to him about it, and he was very interested in that. We created this record from nothing. There was no such thing as world music in 1981 when we made this record. We just kind of started doing this from nothing as a fun little exercise as young guys. Living in a recording studio is something that we don't do anymore with older guys with families and shit. But back then, we lived in the studio. So we said, let's do something really extravagant. It was four 24-track tapes in sync. And it was a big production. We loved the tune. It's just, we had the chorus. And it was like, okay, that's really catchy, man. But, I don't know about it. We're from North Hollywood, Africa, really? But, this thing, I never called it. And, so half the band was like, Dave, save this for your solo record or whatever. We were joking around about it. But, who knew it would be the golden carrot that it's become? Now it's just ridiculous. It's over the top.
Oh, it's fantastic,
but,
man.
It's been really good for business, though. What the heck am I going to say?
Nothing wrong with that. And I love, I was thinking about, too, the fact that you talk about the inspiration, from guys like the Wrecking Crew. And I'm a big fan of what happened to Muscle Shoals. And, I was even watching Sound.
The rhythm sections that we looked up to. These are people that we really admired and wanted to be like,
And Sound City, when the documentary for Sound City, it's cool now that we're actually documenting some of this stuff.
It's funny how we always get left off all this stuff. We got left out of Quincy Jones' documentary. We get left out of that. We spent more time there than fucking Dave Grohl did, I can tell you that.
Is that place that magical because of the board, or was it the just the vibe, or what was it?
It's a great room, man. You know what I mean? It's one of those things you can't, I used to work there and go, yeah, this place is okay. I wasn't really that wowed by it, But really, it depends on who's sitting behind the desk, who's the engineer. They got a great room, great desk, and a great, old microphones and tube stuff. It's great stuff, but a lot of studios have that. I think the magic is in the walls, just the fact that so many cool people worked in there. There's a mojo in there that's sort of something you can't really put your fingers on, I think Dave captured it. I love Grohl. I'm not putting him down. I'm just saying, he made this film, and once again, we just get... we're an afterthought, even though we were on so many people's records. It's like people don't ever give us any credit for it,
Hey, man, I saw the...
We had a stepchild, rock and roll.
You are, dude, I know we got to wrap it up here and hand you off to somebody else, man, but I got to tell you, the Gospel According to Luke, Steve Lukather is a wonderful read.
Thank you, brother.
I got to tell you the
hey,
one.
Man, we'll be back.
Thank you for your time. And when the guy, I got to get the box set now. We got that going.
Yeah,
and,
man, the box set drops in like probably the end of November.
Come on back.
It's really good. It's got a brand new whole album in there too.
Well, you ever want to come back to Motor City on my dime? We'll get you back here and we'll hang out.
There. Promise.
All right.
I promise.
All the best, Luke.
Take it easy, brother.
All right, there he goes.
Bye-bye.
There you go, Steve Lukather. Wow. I'm telling you, it's a great read. I'm not just saying it because we were talking with him. It is a great read. What a cool dude, man. And you are blown away by just the sheer number, 5,000 albums. He figured the members of Toto played on over 5,000 albums and had around 225 Grammy nominations amongst them. That's how many stuff they played on. He plays on everything from Steely Dan to he's in Ringo's All-Star Band. Just spend a couple minutes and go look him up. Steve Lukather. Steve Lukather. All right. Wrap it up for this episode. He's exactly how I thought. And I'm serious, man. I will pay to get that guy back here. We got to talk to him more. He has the greatest stories. All right. Now, you can subscribe, of course. Big Jim's Garage, if you want to subscribe, just do that on iTunes here. You can follow us. I'm on the radio here locally in the Motor City. 6 to 10 a.m., Big Jim's House, our morning show with Aaron V and producer Ryan. Thanks for being part of the show, and we will talk with you soon, man. All right, later.